if you approach it like that, right, we can approach life with fear or excitement. If we know that in advance, it's going to be bumpy. You're going to get from this bus to this train to that airplane. You can approach it with excitement. But Seth Godin talks about this a lot in his work, how people, based on decisions they make or investments they make, certain sunk costs, that they'll stay in one lane. Like, oh, well, but I invested in this degree, so I should stay in this. Like, no, if it's not fulfilling you in the way you should, you know, it's okay to pivot to a brand new direction. For me, that's exciting, right? To know that we're going to end up somewhere totally different. Now, have I always thought like that? Absolutely not. But a lot of people are unwilling to make decisions, or the exact converse, where people are keeping all of their options open. And when you keep all of your options open, you're not making any decisions.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills, and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you. I speak to fascinating individuals like writers, entrepreneurs, anthropologists, professors, psychologists, ultra athletes, and servicemen. On today's discussion, I delve into how we can all find ourselves getting carried along on the runaway train that is life. How this often leads to us feeling different to the outside world as what we feel inside, and how easy it is to slip into the trap of living your life on autopilot. I also find out how you can snap out of this and start to take hold of the controls of your life once more. Every conversation we have translates the experience and expertise of our guests into practical knowledge you can use to better understand yourself as a dad, and in the process, improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career, and the way in which you show up to the world as a role model to the next generation. We also cover tricky subjects from all angles and viewpoints to give you a new and different perspective. My guest today is Antonio Neves, author of Stop Living on Autopilot and host of the Best Thing podcast, internationally recognized speaker and enjoyed and a career in TV with NBC, PBS and BET networks. Antonio's recent book, Stop Living on Autopilot, tells the story of how he went through a very low period in his life when, to the outside world, everything was great, in fact better than great, how he had to make some radical changes to begin to refocus on what was important and get clarity on the things that mattered to him by living boldly instead of passively. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Antonio Neves. Antonio, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. I had to get you on and speak to you because I grabbed a copy of your book recently, Stop Living on Autopilot, and it was a fantastic book. And a lot of the stuff, as I just mentioned, as we were chatting off air, really resonated with me for a number of different reasons. But first and foremost, who is Antonio Neves?
That's a good question. I think there's always two ways to answer that question. Anyone can do that, right? We can do the internet answer. The internet will tell you that I'm the author of Stop Living on Autopilot. I'm the host of the Best Thing podcast. I'm an internationally recognized speaker who travels across the globe and the United States during normal times to deliver keynotes primarily on leadership themes and workplace engagement. These days, I'm doing that virtually. Prior to that, the internet will tell you that for many years in the United States and New York City, I was a reporter and a correspondent for a lot of networks in New York City. But I've come to learn the older I get, and if I had a beard right now, you'd see a lot of gray hair, that the internet only tells a story. It does not tell the whole story. Typically, the most fascinating, interesting things you'll find out about people will never show up in a bio, will never show up in a Google search. So if I have to answer the question without the internet answer, I love to say that I'm Gigi's husband and I'm August and Harper's father. And just saying that, man, feels so much more impressive than the other stuff that the internet will tell you.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And there's a reason why I asked you that straight off the bat, because I knew that there was that was possibly going to be your response on that one. So what was the inspiration behind your new book? I mean, you talk about kind of standing at the back of your house, I think it was, smoking a menthol cigarette with your gardening gloves on and stuff, and then a guy walking up to you and imparting some words of wisdom on you. How did that kind of episode kind of come about, and you know, this point where you thought, I need to change some stuff here?
Yeah, the quick background of Stop Living on Autopilot, and we were just talking about the internet, so internet's a cool place to start, is back in 2016, if you looked at the internet, I was killing it. I was on fire. I was living a successful career, as mentioned, traveling across the country, delivering keynotes, a great coaching practice, married, kids, house with a white picket fence, all those things that you aspire for. But inside, man, I was slowly wilting. I was struggling. Even though the internet, even though the resume, all of the external markers of success said everything is going great for this guy, inside, everything was going the exact opposite direction. I'd reached a point where I'd gained nearly 30 pounds. I grew this big old beard to hide the weight gain, which it did not, by the way. Everyone who's listening, beards do not hide the weight gain. People will know if you gain some weight. I spent my evenings really sedating myself with that glass of wine, those couple glasses of tequila, you name it. And as you mentioned, I became a secret cigarette smoker. Cigarette smoking is something that I despise. My grandmother died from lung cancer. My family are a lot of smokers. So growing up, one thing I said I would never do was become a smoker. Yet here I was hiding the fact that I was smoking from my wife, my family, and my friends. Until one day I was smoking a cigarette in an alley in Los Angeles, and I was wearing this bright green gardening glove. And I wore the bright green gardening gloves so my wife and my friends wouldn't smell the cigarette smoke on me. And a homeless man, what I perceived to be a homeless man, came up to me and asked to bum a cigarette from me. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Looked like he had seen plenty of better days. We started smoking like cigarettes do and having a like people do. And we started having a conversation. He asked me about the green glove. And I told him, oh, my wife doesn't know that I smoke. I don't want to let her know. And he looked at me like I committed a crime. He looked at me with like he felt sorry for me. Mm. Here I am, the successful guy on the internet. Here he is, what I perceive to be a homeless man, looking at me with disdain. And at some point, he just looked at me and said, hey, man, you got to figure that shit out. You got to figure that out. And that was a moment that really hit me hard. And it set me on a journey to transform my life, or rather reconnect to my life. I'd reached an interesting point, though everything on the resume was good. I'd stopped being bold in many ways. I'd stopped being courageous. I'd stopped having certain standards. I'd stopped having values. I had plateaued. And the irony was that the internet would have never told you that I was in this place. Everything was fine. Just briefly, it makes me think back to when I moved to New York City in 2000 with less than $1,000 in my bank account, with the dream and the goal of breaking into the television industry, and who that person was. Let's just say that person that had hustle, that had ambition, that had optimism, that had standards, that had values, had completely disappeared. And in many ways, I had to refine some elements of that guy. Not all elements, but some elements of that person to stop living on autopilot and get off of cruise control.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you say that, because I found personally that I think that when guys kind of reach kind of middle age, and this is a theme that's come up a lot in the podcast conversations that I have, particularly with men and dads, that there is a point in around that kind of midpoint, like episode of life where something happens which just kind of throws you off. And it's like you know that youthful exuberance you have when you're like maybe 18 to kind of 25, where you, yeah, I'm going to take on the world. I can do anything and I can achieve anything. And if I put my mind to it, I can do this, this and this. It's like guys become kind of almost like battle weary by the time they get to kind of middle age, and their kind of best days seem like they're behind them. And in actual fact, all they've got to look forward to is kind of the happily kind of ever after. And I notice it a lot with particularly dads, is that, and you're obviously a dad yourself, this kind of where your kind of life plan is that you kind of sort of, you're going to get a job and you're going to settle down, you're going to have kids and get a house and you're going to have all these things. But then you get to that point and you're like, well, hang on a minute. I'd never really thought about what was going to come after the once upon a time bit. And then, so you get to this point where you've got all this stuff, all these haves and wants and stuff. But then you're like, hang on, so what next?
Yeah, well, what next? But what's interesting about what you're saying is we have all of this stuff, right? We get to this point in life where we accumulate all of this stuff. In the United States, we call it the American dream. Like, we've been sold this consumerism of you get your education, you get a job, you buy a home, and you get a 30-year mortgage. I mean, come on. You want me to commit to something for 30 years, right? We get this 30-year mortgage. We get this car. Then we fill up this house with all these things that society tells us that we want. But it never did we actually hit pause and say, yo, do I want this? Do I want this? We get on the conveyor belt, and I can only speak for the educational system in the United States, but we are on a very clear conveyor belt, the hedonic treadmill, if you will, of where society wants us to go. And someone else chose that for us. We didn't really choose it for ourselves. So I think a lot of people reach that point that you're talking about when they're like, whoa, I have all the stuff that society tells me that I want, that I should be happy, but I never really ask myself, do I truly want this? Another way to think about this, that, you know, that young vigor that we had in our youth, is I like to think about it like sports. If you're a sports fan, and we can talk about football for a quick second, we can always think about that team that comes out in the first half on the pitch, and it comes to halftime and they're up 3-0, right? And then all of a sudden they come out for the second half of the match, it's stoppage time, and all of a sudden it's 3-3. Like, what happened? We were up 3-0 at halftime. And here we are tied with in stoppage time, right? What happens is at some point in the first half, we were playing to win. And then at some point, we were playing not to lose. Those are two different ways to approach life, playing to win and playing not to lose. And I think once we accumulate all of this stuff, a lot of it being material stuff, we start playing not to lose. We get safe. I do a lot of coaching with executives. It blows me away. These amazing, talented men and women, they have titles like director and vice president and senior vice president and general manager. All of a sudden, they get these jobs with these big titles. Guess what happens? All the things that they used to do to get that title, they stop doing them. They stop taking those risks. They stop being bold because they want to hold on to it so tight. I got one more thing to say, because you brought up something interesting about, you know, dads and what role that plays in that. For me, something that was challenging as well in the midst of all of this is that I felt like at that point in 2016, that the manual that I had been giving came to an end. Like, the manual of life, it just stopped. And I was like, oh, now I got to figure this out on my own. 2016 was around the time that my father was diagnosed with dementia. And the man that I used to have deep conversations with, I could no longer talk to him in the way that I used to. So when I needed advice, I needed support, I needed expertise, gone. He used to be Mr. Nevs. Now I was Mr. Nevs. People don't talk about that when you lose a parent, that they used to be Mr. whatever. And now you become that Mr. Like, right? Growing up, even though my father was around, he wasn't around a lot in my day-to-day life. My parents were divorced when I was very young. So even what it meant to be a father, like that manual, like I was like, how do I do this with two twins? To be a husband, I feel like that manual, I never had a manual for that. Between my mom and dad are a total of 6 different divorces. So I was trying to figure out how do I do all of this? And that helped, that made me, made is the wrong word, but I took the easy way out to go start having smoking those cigarettes and distract myself and sedate myself with things, as opposed to confronting it head on.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you've just jogged my memory talking about this. Ed Milet, I heard him talking to Aubrey Marcus about this the other day, because Ed Milet's recently lost his dad to cancer, I think. And he was saying that in this bizarre kind of way, when his dad passed away, all of a sudden, he'd given himself permission to do all the things that he'd never did when his dad was around as well. And it's a really... I could relate to it, but I'd never heard him... Ed Milet's very good at articulating this kind of stuff, but it was like, even though he was a grown man, he still ran stuff by his dad. You know what I mean? But then when he wasn't around, all of a sudden, these wings that he didn't know he had suddenly kind of sprout, and he kind of takes off again, sort of thing.
Yeah, the author David Data. If you're familiar with David Data and his work, he wrote the book The Way of the Superior Man, which is an amazing book. He has a chapter on the book that specifically focuses on live your life as if your parents are dead.
Mm.
He talks about that because, to your point, that quote unquote, I didn't see the interview, the conversation with Ed and Aubrey. I'm not sure if he was talking about freedom or not, but when we do live our life as if our parents are dead, we show up a lot differently. We're not looking necessarily for approval. We're willing to, in many ways, trust ourselves and our preparation in that moment, what they provided us with. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, that's all right. That's all right. It was one of those things, you know, when it's like being a fellow podcaster, as two brains start to interconnect, all of a sudden sparks go off and you suddenly you think of stuff that's kind of relatable to the kind of conversation. What I really liked about your book as well is that one of the things that I hate about personal development, and I've had actually people say to me, come along, we're going to do a day's training, and we're going to do 10-year visions, and we're going to do 5-year visions, and we're going to do all these kind of visions. What I liked about your book at the beginning of it, you talk about the 30-day exercise, which I really liked. And I'm going to let you explain this a little bit more and why it's kind of quite a lot more powerful than trying to get your telescope and look like 10 years in ahead of you.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, every personal development self-help workshop, they're always going to talk about that 5-year plan or that 10-year plan. In my experience as a coach, that really paralyzes a lot of people. Like, we're trying to think about next month, next year. It's really hard to get out there in the future. And that doesn't excuse us for not having a vision or a North Star for our future and for our plans. But it does make me think about my good friend, the author, Bassam Tarazi. He has a book and it's titled, In 5 Years, You Will Be Wrong. Basically saying, whatever you think is going to happen in 5 years, I can promise you that you will be wrong. I can tell you right now, if I go back to 2016, what was going on in my life, I would have never been able to fathom what's happening in my life today. My guess is for you as well, there's something very similar. If we go back to 2016 for you or anyone listening, in 5 years, you will be wrong. So what I do in the book is lay out this exercise. And this is a good way for folks to know if they're living on autopilot or not, if they're coasting, if they're on cruise control, if they're going through the motions. And it's the 30-day exercise. And I invite people to think back to the last 30 days of their life in some key categories. So one example is you can look at the last 30 days of your career. If you happen to be have a job, or maybe you're an entrepreneur or something like that, and ask yourself a simple question. If your employer, if your company, your manager had to make a decision to rehire you based on the last 30 days of work, would the answer immediately be yes, or would there be some type of hesitation? Those last 30 days show you a lot about how you are or how you are not showing up in life. Let me tell you, when I ask that question, whether I'm doing a virtual workshop or workshop in person, pretty much everyone in the room is like, yo, I don't know if they would immediately rehire me. A great way to look at this 30-day question as well is with our relationships, with our spouse, significant others, partners. If based on the last 30 days, your wife, your husband, your boyfriend and girlfriend had to make a decision to recommit to you or not, would they immediately say yes? I get really uncomfortable chuckles and laughter in rooms when I do that question right there, because most people are like, yo, I am so different from that person I was when we first started dating. That person that was really interested in them, that person that courted them, that person that did all those loving gestures. We can go so many different directions with that as parents, right? With our personal finances, with our health, with our fitness, our diet. your last 30 days tell you a lot about where you are and where you are not heading. Tells you so much whether or not people would bet on you or not bet on you. Yesterday's not enough. Great. Maybe you ate good yesterday and you worked out yesterday and you were super kind to your spouse yesterday. But if you were whack the previous 7 days prior to that, come on. I have to give you a quick example. You're going to appreciate this based on the conversations you have on this podcast. The family, we're having a great time the other day. We're going around talking to our 4-year-old twins. We're asking what their superpowers are. So we go to my son and we say, hey, what's your superpower? And he's like, oh, I can be invisible. We go to my daughter and like, yo, what's your superpower? And she's like, oh, I can run really, really, really fast. And then I just jumped in. I was like, what do you think daddy's superpower is? Without hesitation, my son said, working.
Ooh,
working. Yo, my wife and I, we had chuckled, had a little laughter with that. But let me tell you something, man, that broke my heart.
And you
the for fact all- that as we're having fun playing, that he thinks that my superpower is working, going into this door, behind this door in this room I'm in right now to shut the door and be away all day. Like, that broke my heart. So when I think about my last 30 days as a parent, would they immediately say, I want you to be my dad again, right? I realize I have to show up a little bit different. I have to do some things different in this household. Mm-hmm. To be clear, previously the working didn't happen in this room all the time. I would leave. I'd be on planes. I would go places. So they didn't associate dad with working while being home and unavailable to us. So I get all that kind of fun pandemic stuff. But still, man, you talk about a punch to the throat when your superpower is being called working. That's not what I want to be known as a father.
Mm. So I guess you had to go for a little bit of a walk and think to yourself after that one. But what I like about this 30 day technique though is because 30 days is not a very long period of time, but it's enough to flip the script so you end up taking ownership of the situation yourself rather than kind of blaming it on someone else. But also 30 days looking forward from the point at which you're at now is long enough to begin to make some changes. And when people talk about habit formation, it's anything between, I think, 30 and 60 days. I've recently been studying atomic habits with my dad's group, and yeah, so it's a really good process on a number of levels, this 30 day exercise. A, it's a quick snapshot. B, it gives you a short period of time to build in new habits and processes. But also the third thing is it gives you that ownership that most people, I think, really need more than anything else. So I like it a lot.
100%. It gives you a good roadmap. It gives you a good blueprint for moving forward. And as I always tell people, you know, I want us to do less. I think we try to do too much in many ways. Like, it's funny when people are trying to create new habits or they're trying to get in shape. I mean, you'll hear people say things like, oh, I'm going to work out every single day. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're not going to work out every single day. Something's going to get in the way. There's going to be distractions. How about you plan to work out for 3 days this upcoming week? We can look at our finances, our diet, et cetera. There are amazing things we can do. We can be in a very different place, not totally different place, but a very different place, especially mentally, if we make brand new decisions over the course of the next 30 days. And that's the key word right there that people don't talk about enough. And I really dig into this and stop living on autopilot, is being willing to make decisions. I have to remind people that not making a decision is making a decision. It's like, we excuse ourselves. Well, I didn't say anything. Well, I didn't do anything. Exactly. You did something by not saying anything, by not doing anything. So what I'm inviting people to do, man, is just to be willing to make a decision. You can always change it. We may be wrong, but just make a decision.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And I often use the analogy of kind of setting sail. So you kind of, you chart your destination that you're going to move towards, and then you set sail in that direction. But if it's not kind of quite right, you can adjust the rudder and you can reposition because it's not quite where you thought it was going to be, and you can reposition. But you've got to hoist your sails up to actually begin to move in a certain direction before you can actually go anywhere.
That's beautiful. Like, but people are so paralyzed just to make that decision. They're afraid to commit. Mm. And just a reminder to everyone, I have to remind myself every single day, committing is just the first step. People, oh, you got to commit. Yes, And tomorrow, guess what? You have to recommit. You have to recommit every single day to that relationship, to that podcast that you host, et cetera. I don't know about you. I get rejected so much from my podcast. I invite a lot of cool people to come on my podcast and I get rejected so much, and which is okay. Right. And so that means I have to recommit the next day to that podcast. So still sending out those invites and those invitations, because it's something that brings me joy. It's something that I love. So not only do we have to commit, we have to recommit. And briefly, I don't know if you ever work with super young professionals, but when people come out of university here in their states, they're always afraid to, which job should I take? Which job should I take? And I'm like, remember, your first job won't be your last job. Mm-hmm. Like, don't freak out on making that decision. Just make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing is nowadays, because people, you know, like you were saying about that kind of route that people have to take, and particularly young people have to take, there's so much of a, they've spent so many years training, studying, invested in that particular route, that the kind of whole idea of actually doing something other than the route that they've trained to do is kind of like mind blowing. And it kind of, it's almost like they're a traitor to not doing the route that they've actually said that they're going to do. But in actual fact, it's kind of, it's at odds with how life would be, really. Like, you know, life is kind of a journey, and you're going to kind of get off one train and get onto a bus, and then you're going to get off a bus and onto an aeroplane. You don't go through your whole life and say, right, I'm going to do this my whole life. I'm going to be on the bus, and I'm not going to deviate from being on the bus. You know what I mean? But I think a lot of people live their lives like that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, if you approach it like that, right, we can approach life with fear or excitement. If we know that in advance, it's going to be bumpy. You're going to get from this bus to this train to that airplane. You can approach it with excitement. But Seth Godin talks about this a lot in his work, how people, based on decisions they make or investments they make, certain sunk costs, that they'll stay in one lane. Like, oh, well, but I invested in this degree, so I should stay in this. Like, no, if it's not fulfilling you in the way you should, you know, it's okay to pivot to a brand new direction. For me, that's exciting, right? To know that we're going to end up somewhere totally different. Now, have I always thought like that? Absolutely not. But a lot of people are unwilling to make decisions, or the exact converse, where people are keeping all of their options open. Mm. And when you keep all of your options open, you're not making any decisions.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in here very quickly. If you have listened for any period of time, you will know that I place a massive value in having a group of other men around you to elevate what you think is possible for yourself. I want to tell you about the exclusive brotherhood I've put together called the Dad Circle, which is a group of dads committed to improving themselves in a number of areas in order to become the men and dads they always wanted to be. Not just this, but hardwired into the fabric of this brotherhood are a number of features, including weekly Zoom calls, monthly topics, challenges and assignments, together with a growing library of resources, fitness and mental challenges. You'll get just the accountability that you're looking for when you're surrounded by a group of other men looking to level up and go on a journey in exactly the same way. If this resonates with you and you would like to find out more, head on over to www.thedadscircle.com/join. That's thedadscircle.com/join. Yeah. And what do you think some of the most kind of common beliefs that people are telling themselves and their stories that they're telling themselves about the stuff they can't do and why they can't do something as opposed to why they can do something? What do you think the most common things are, Antonio?
It's a few things. But one, people think they have this endless runway, right? I can do it tomorrow. Right. I think people, they have a lot of confidence in themselves. Like, oh, I can do this. I can do X. But you know what? I'll do it tomorrow. It's kind of like that Spanish proverb I'm sure you've heard. The busiest day of the week is tomorrow, right? Mm. And as I tell people all the time, it's never too late. And the longer you wait, the harder it gets. That's a good smack in the face that people need to hear sometime. Another one that people need to hear is your dreams have an expiration date. Mm. Like, if you don't act on them, your dreams have an expiration date. In the book, I talk about this example of, like, oh, you can imagine a tombstone. I think for many people, the tombstone can be the day that we're born, the day that we give up or settle, and the day that we die. And for a lot of people, the day that we settle or give up till the day that we die is a long amount of time. Lastly, and something that you know is extremely important, the reason why the stories people tell themselves or why certain things are happening is because they've settled in the types of relationships they have in their life. They don't have men or women around them who are encouraging them. The folks that I call allies, right? So that's why I'm such a big proponent of, if you want to call them, I don't care if you call them group coaching programs. I don't care if you call them masterminds, call them whatever language you want to call them. But when you're associated with the group with a positive goal, amazing things can happen. A lot of people around us in our day to day, let's be clear, they have a vested interest in you staying the same. The people in your day to day life, most of them have a vested interest in you staying the same. And that is because as you grow, as you start to accomplish goals, as you start to make more money, as you start your own podcast, as you start to lose weight, as you start to smile more, all of a sudden that holds up a mirror to them, to all the things that they are not doing in their life. Your success can threaten people. Your growth can scare people. That's why it's so important to find those groups. And these men or women, they don't have to be your best friends, but these are people who show up to encourage you, to inspire you, to challenge you, to push you, to hold you accountable to be the absolute best version of yourself. I call these folks allies in my book, Stop Living on Autopilot. And as you know, these allies, one of the best things about allies is they're going to keep it real with you. They're going to provide what I like to call good friction. Like if you tell them you're going to do something, they're going to say, great, by when? If there's one thing that's really missing in society is A, spending time with allies, right? But B, people who hold you accountable, because it's so much easier to say, I'm going to do it tomorrow. It's so much easier to get defensive. But let me tell you something. When you surround yourself with the right people, whoa, where you can be a week from now, a month from now, a year from now is a whole other ball game. And just to be clear, these folks don't have to be your best friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are just people that you commit to engaging with, whether that's weekly, monthly, you name it. So that's one of the main reasons why folks aren't doing things and they get stuck, because they need to look around at the people they're spending time with and ask themselves, do these people I'm currently spending time with, do they make me better? Or do they allow me to stand where I am and settle? I'm inviting everyone, and I'm reminding myself right now to surround yourself with people who want to see you win. Ooh, that's just a game changer, as you know.
Yeah, yeah, and it's getting your having a group of people that are going to hold your feet to the fire and be able to walk into a room or walk or get onto a Zoom call with someone. And in actual fact, they know the BS that you're telling yourself, and they recognize that BS, and they're actually saying, come on, come on, you don't need to do this and stuff. And it's having that ability to park your ego at the door and not get offended when someone actually is calling you out and stuff. And it's horrible. It's horrible. It's like it's being on a fisherman's hook and squirming when you know what they're saying is right, but you just don't want to act on that. But once you're in that environment,
that's a great, that fisherman's hook. That fisherman's hook is such a great way.
You can wriggle all you want, but you're not getting off that hook. But I think it underlines a really important principle though, Antonio, because I think a lot of people get extremely disheartened when they start on their journey or they decide that they're going to have a change in the kind of trajectory of their life or what's important to them. But then those around them are really kind of pulling them down, sort of thing. And to me, I see it a lot, a massive amount. And it's heartbreaking sometimes, because often the people that are doing that are often the people that are the very closest to you as well. What would you say to people that are going through that experience? Because you know full well that you will have coached people in that, going through that, and you may have been in that situation yourself as well. What do you say to these people?
You're speaking specifically about being around people who aren't supporting you. Is that correct?
Yeah. When you're going for something and you've got people that are kind of, they're doing overt and also not so overt sabotage of where you want to be going.
Yeah. Well, a few things come up. And unfortunately, as you just mentioned, that is normal. Again, first and foremost, as you start to grow and stretch yourself, it holds up a mirror to what other people are not doing. So they're going to find a way to bring you back to what they're used to you being. And that's going to give you a hard time. That's going to say things that aren't encouraging, et cetera. As I mentioned earlier, surround yourself with people who want to win, and just know that your family and your friends, unfortunately, won't always understand the decisions that you make. Let me say that again. Your family and friends won't always understand the decisions that you make, and that's okay. You have to be okay with that. What you're going to have to do is a couple of things. First and foremost, you're going to have to create some boundaries for yourself. That's one of the hardest things. And I get it. Well, what if it's my people I live in the same house as, or people, colleagues? That's okay. When certain conversation topics come up, when you start hearing resistance on certain things, when things aren't positive, maybe that's when you make your exit. Or maybe you decide to have a heart to heart, a real conversation with one of your mates. And you say, hey, look, listen, Jim, I have some new goals in my life that I'm trying to achieve. These things are important to me for a variety of reasons. I've noticed when I talk about these things or I do these things, you've given me some resistance or you give me a challenging time. Would you be open to not doing that? Can you tell me more about that? One thing we very rarely do is we are unwilling to have those conversations, those awkward conversations. Let's be clear. Those conversations, 9 times out of 10, are going to end up with the other person being defensive. And they're not going to agree with you. They're going to give you a hard time. But what I want you to know is that you were willing to have that conversation, not pick a fight, just have that conversation. If they're not open, guess what? You have to find a way to create that boundary with that individual. It's not always going to be easy because people are going to say, oh, now you think you're better than us. You're not showing up to the pub anymore. You used to always watch the game with us on Sundays. And this can be tough to hear, but remember, you got to think about what your goal is, where you are trying to get. And if you stay here, where it's going to keep you. Something else I learned early on, I come from a background where I was the first person in my family to go to university and to earn a degree. Most people stay in this small town in Michigan, where I'm from, not far from Detroit, Michigan. But I knew always I wanted to do something different. I learned early on when I started sharing my goals with some of my family and friends, those immediate folks, that when I go to them with this excitement, I'm thinking about moving to Orlando, Florida, or I'm thinking about studying in Spain. What I would find sometimes is they would tell me all the reasons why this wasn't a good decision. Well, hey, maybe have you thought about this? You know those people, but have you thought about this? Well, let me just play devil's advocate for a second. No, you know what? We need people in our life who are trying to play, I'm going to put it like this, God's advocate. Instead of playing devil's advocate, why don't you play God's advocate? So what I learned is that sometimes I'm not going to tell you what my move is until after I've made the move. I'm not going to tell you the decision that I've made until after I made it, because I'm not going to give you the opportunity to talk me out of it, right? We always talk about, oh, you got to share your goals with everyone. Guess what? Your goals aren't for everyone. Your story isn't for everyone. You get to decide who you share your goals with. You get to decide who you share your story with. So those are a few things I think can come in handy. But let's be clear, it's not going to be easy. And it can be heartbreaking, the distance that it creates.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember Brian Tracy saying about this years ago, and he used to say, make your goals, but just don't tell anyone. He said, just don't tell anyone. They don't need to know. That's none of their business. Just don't tell them. Do yourself a favor. Don't tell them. And what you just said there just reminds me of what he said, and that was kind of many years ago. How do you think people can get more kind of clarity around kind of what the things that they kind of really want? Because sometimes when you're trying to get clear on stuff, it's fuzzy and it's cloudy. And we've delved into this a little bit in terms of just making a start and then kind of working out where you want to go from there.
I would say the best way to go about figuring out what you want to do is doing less. I like to think about this like a computer operating system. In society nowadays, you know, we've glamorized a multitasking, right? And as you and I both know, multitasking is a myth. When I came out of university, that's something I would say in job interviews. What's one of your strengths? multitasking. Now, if somebody tells me that, I'm like, oh, this person probably isn't focused. So I like to think about life like a computer operating system. And if you have a lot of applications open and running at the same time, what happens? Your computer, your processing speed slows down. Worst case scenario, it can lead to a crash. I'm a firm believer that we are trying to do too much. Right now, we have people pursuing a lot of different things. But guess what? Nothing is getting finished. Project A is 20% complete. Project B is 80% complete. Project C is 13% complete. Project D is whatever, right? What I'm going to invite people to do is to finish something, to go all in on something, not to be an idea person, but to be an I did it person. Something happens when you finish something. It gives you permission to continue pursuing it or to say, no, I finished this. I did this. And you know what? It's not for me. Now I'm going to go in another direction. The challenge we have right now is that people are trying to do too many things, and that leads to slow processing speed. In the amazing book by Jim Collins, Good to Great, he has a quote that I'm paraphrasing that says, if you have more than three priorities, then you don't have any. That's a powerful one for a business owner, for someone who's leading a team, maybe even for your family. If you have more than three priorities, then you don't have any. So I'm going to invite people like, I don't know what to do, Antonio. I'm going to invite you to do something. Again, we talked earlier about making a decision. The reason why people are confused and it's gray and it's fuzzy is because they have been unwilling to make a decision. Now, am I going to say the first thing you choose after you listen to this podcast is going to be it? No. But guess what? You will have finished something. You have received data from that experience, and then you can go on from there. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's going to be bumpy roads along the way, and that's okay. As a good friend, his grandfather once told him, he said, live an interesting life. No one wants to talk to an old person who doesn't have interesting stories to tell.
Yeah.
Right. It's all part of the journey, but pick something and finish it and then move on from there.
Yeah. And I like the way you reference data as well, because I think that you've got to kind of enjoy the process, but also it's this idea that this has kind of become more resonating for me recently. Someone said about looking at yourself as an experiment, like a science experiment, that you're constantly trying different stuff out to see kind of what works and refining it and tweaking it and stuff. And what you said about having operating systems, I've come to this really like, so I'm on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Okay. And I've got a Facebook group and I've got a Daz Mastermind. Being on a lot of social media channels, I don't have a social media manager. I do it myself. And so it takes up a lot of bandwidth doing that. Over the weekend, I had a bit of a break time, took a bit of a break backseat from it and stuff. And then I suddenly realized, well, actually, that's not really that important for me right now. It's important for me to be on there so people can find me and they can see what I do. But in actual fact, it's not adding as much as it is to my kind of objectives as it needs to. And it was spreading me thin. And you know what it's like. You're someone else has posted something. So what I did, and this is picking a little tip from, funny enough, the Atomic Habits book, James Clear talks about resetting your part. He gets his assistant to reset his social media passwords every weekend and not give them to him till the Monday morning sort of thing.
That's great.
So I did a variation of that this last couple of days. And what I've done is I've actually taken, I've got a random password generator, reset all of the passwords, logged out on my iPhone, logged out on my PC, so that you've got a bit of a resistance between actually going on social media and actually getting onto it. So now I've kind of printed off this passcode, stuck it in my wallet. So I've actually got to go and get my wallet, look at the passcode. I've actually got to physically log onto it because by default I'm logged off now. And oh my God, Antonio, the last 2 to 3 days of doing this now, how much am I getting done just by not having it going ping, 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 you know,
yeah,
every couple of minutes?
And you didn't miss anything. Like no one died. You didn't miss anything. That's the thing. We think we're going to miss something. And even as it relates to social media, and this is for another conversation, you know, a lot of my friends who've had success, they've really chosen to go all in on one. And yes, everything will post everywhere else. But like, hey, my channel is LinkedIn or my channel is Instagram. I'm not trying to curate something on all everywhere. That may be the person here. But we think we're going to, again, we think we're going to miss out on something. We're not making a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that's the other thing as well. It's weird that once you're, you go back on and you're like, hang on a bit, nothing happened. Nothing happened
when I was. And no one missed you.
No one missed me. It's like really, it's like a really weird experience, but a good experience as well, because it means actually you can, like Cal Newport says, you can go away and you can do deep work without being kind of too seduced by keep going into this stuff. One of the things I just wanted to touch upon is you talk about this idea of uniform and how people wear a uniform. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, the brief examples. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in a very blue collar family. Father worked in a factory his whole life. My mother was a secretary at an organization. And so at my home, there wasn't folks working in white collar jobs. And so I thought the person that was successful was the man that lived on the other side of town from us, the nice side of town. And he wore this, what I perceive as a uniform, as khakis, a white button down, a blue blazer, and he had like loafers on with tassels. So I thought that's what success was. That's what owning a house is. That's what having a garage is. That's what's going on a vacation two times a year is. And I'll never forget when I was in university, I got my very first internship and I bought that exact same uniform. And I remember putting it on thinking I'm successful now. I'm dressed like the man on the other side of town. And I felt absolutely horrible. I felt like I was wearing a costume, but I went on to wear some version of that uniform for many, many years. That uniform transitioned during my careers in the television industry to even during the time now when I'm on stages giving speeches and talks. And so a uniform is anything we wear in life without truly thinking why we're wearing it. It can be physical clothes. It can be a car that we drive. It can be a handbag that we should wear, a type of shoes that we wear. It could be a mindset. It can be a church we go to that just because everyone else goes to it. It's some type of uniform that helps us fit in. It helps us fit in. But again, as we talked about at the beginning, is this truly serving us? Is this my uniform? Is this a uniform I want to wear? Again, I'm using the term uniform loosely. So at some point I realized that's not who I was and how I wanted to show up. So that uniform, for example, in the past few years that I'd wear as a speaker on stage was a crisp pair of slacks, a nice button up and a nice designer blazer. I'd look like $1 million, but I never felt like me because in my real life, I'm a guy that wears jeans, sneakers, and a t-shirt. And I remember the day that I decided to go to my speaking engagement, a big one, wearing exactly that, jeans, sneakers, a t-shirt, and like a chore jacket. Don't get me wrong, still looking nice, but just not the standard stuff that they expect from speakers. I was freaked out. I thought the client was going to fire me. I thought the audience would think that I was an amateur. But funny enough, when I showed up as me, not trying to impersonate someone else, what I think success is, A, I was more alive on stage. B, I found that instead of being disconnected from the client, disconnected from the audience, I was even more connected because all of a sudden they saw a guy that wasn't trying to be like them, that wasn't trying to be in their lane, that was doing his own thing. So all of a sudden I looked even more like an expert. Because I wasn't trying to be like everyone else. And an amazing freedom came with that. So for the folks listening, I just invite you to think about what uniform, again, loosely, quote unquote, uniform are you wearing in your life? And it goes far beyond clothes. It really goes to the mindset, what we're trying to prove, what we think success is, how are we going to fit in and be willing to stand on our own with our own beliefs, which is a big journey for me that's ongoing. But holy moly, when you're willing to shed the uniform, that layer of skin like a snake that no longer serves you, Woo, it creates an amazing freedom.
Mm, yeah, and I like the way you make a point of it not just being what you're wearing. There's something deep down under the bonnet going on there that is on a number of different levels. I love it. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today, Antonio, and the book is absolutely fantastic. I'd thoroughly recommend people go and grab a copy of it. It's very simple and effective, the strategies that you run through in it for people to take away and use. What is the best way for people to find out about you and the work that you are doing, sir?
Yes, and I'd like to send everyone to theantonioneves.com. That's the hub of everything. Mm-hmm. Social media the same way, theantonioneves.com. One day, whoever owns antonioneves.com is going to mess up and I'm going to buy it, that person down in Brazil. But for now, theantonioneves.com.
Excellent. And I'm going to ask you one last question before I send you on your way that I don't prime any guests on the podcast for. What is it in life that gives you meaning?
What is my life that gives me meaning? I would say acknowledging every single day that I wake up that the best thing to happen to me is ahead of me as opposed to behind me. So many of us believe that the best thing to ever happen to us is behind us. Buying a home, getting married, having kids, maybe getting our education. But something is lost when we believe that the best is behind us. So when I wake up every single day and know that the best is ahead, that gives me meaning to show up as a great father. It gives me meaning to show up as a great husband. It gives me meaning to show up as a great business owner, you know, with standards and with values. And I'm a firm believer until the day that I can't put my feet on the ground and I can't wake up, that the best is ahead. And when you wake up and you believe and you work like the best is ahead, something magical can happen every single day.
I love it. It's really good. I've really enjoyed hearing you articulate that. Antonio, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. And I wish you all the best, very best of luck with the book. And I hope it continues to be an ongoing success. Thank you very much for joining me today, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. Keep up the amazing work.
Cheers, man. Cheers. Take care. I really enjoyed my conversation with Antonio Neves. His story is all too common and one which I hear a lot. The story of having all the things you think will make you happy, but being desperately unhappy. You can check out his website, theantonioneves.com. He's also on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. The book we mentioned is Stop Living on Autopilot, and I'll link all this up in the show notes along with all the other stuff we discussed over at guildofdads.com. What I liked about Antonio's story is that he's very relatable and it's all too common, the story that he tells. One of the things I often talk about on this very podcast is the barbecue conversation, whereby you meet a buddy who seemingly has everything but is beyond miserable deep, deep down. What's intriguing is that your outer world doesn't always match your inner world, and this seems to be where the real disconnect comes from. Taking a step back and shifting your perspective, living boldly and confronting hard truths, along with accountability, is the key. Maybe our conversation today has given you the much needed food for thought to make some changes in your own life starting today. There's also a video conversation of this interview on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform in all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning, at the same time as becoming the man and dad you always wanted to be. It's all over in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free at guildofdads.com/dad. In order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. If you know someone that could do with improving their relationships, could do with a life rethink, or different perspective, share this episode with them. The best bit, you don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Now, this podcast and the movement Guild of Dads is growing. It's growing week on week. There's more and more guys coming into the Facebook group. week on week and benefiting from the conversations and the camaraderie that goes on over there. So I would thoroughly recommend that if you enjoy the message and you enjoy the topics that I speak about, that you check out the Guild of Dads Facebook group. If you can leave me a review and a rating, particularly on iTunes, it really helps to boost the visibility of the podcast so that other guys can discover it. Like I say, it's growing week on week. We're having the fascinating discussions over in the Facebook group. Check it out. Join the guild today and get involved. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode that I do, so share with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.